This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 239 for Wednesday, July 26th, 2017. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me tonight is Megan Townsend, back again. Hello.
Hi.
I'm glad you're back.
Thanks for having me back. It was really fun last time.
Yeah, I agree. We even had a little bit of fan mail from my friend Lisa that I met at Nerdtacular. Yeah, she sent in a note, which I thought was really cool.
So nice. Thank you so much, Lisa. I'm glad you enjoyed the show.
Yeah, and I'm glad that she followed through and watched it, or not watched it, but listened to it. It's one of those things like, you know, you're out at conventions, you're meeting people, and you tell them about your thing, because everybody has a thing, you know, and honestly, like, I don't really expect people to go, oh, okay, write that down, you know, and then go back and actually listen or actually go to the website or stuff like that. You kind of like, you pepper the masses with the information and hope that maybe like three people show up
right.
to it. But I wasn't doing that at Nerdtacular. I was on vacation, so I was not really networking so much as I was just hanging out with friends. I did meet, you know, Lisa in the crowd. We were watching a panel together. We were chair buddies. We sat next to each other. And I mentioned the show in conversation, so the one person that I mentioned the show to actually went and listened to it. So I'm not sure if she's still listening. She may or may not be a Game of Thrones person. I am assuming she probably is, given the crowd that we were in.
Right.
But you never know. Some people, you know, haven't watched the show and it's just too late and they're just waiting, you know, until it's all done and they're going to binge it all. And so I don't know. But Lisa, if you're listening, thank you very much for the email. We don't get a lot of email here on the Citadel Cafe, so I do really appreciate it when it comes in.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it was really nice when Joel sent it to me. I was like, I had a bit of a minute. It was very, very nice. So
nice. Very, very cool. So what have you been up to since the last time that you were on?
Not as much as I should be.
Welcome to my world.
I should be working on more cosplay, but I have not been doing that as much as I want to be. I'm working a lot, mostly.
Halcon's coming up
fast.
That's
pretty much it. Oh, God, too fast.
Yeah.
Well, we were just talking about this before the show. It's almost August, mm-hmm. and what did someone tell me today? It's like 5 months until Christmas, and I'm still trying to work out the logistics of things, but I might be going back to school in the fall. And I have about a month or 5 weeks to get all that stuff prepped. And
yeah.
Then, yeah. HalCon is usually held
November.
Either late October, early November, between that. And this year it's being held late September. So it's almost a month, 2 months early.
Yeah.
Which is a little scary, but.
Yeah. Especially for someone that has been spent, you know, a lot of time not preparing for it because I didn't get in. Until yesterday.
No, not at all. Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. So I deposit has been made. The email was sent out there. It was just like, hey, welcome to HalCon. I was like, so I guess that means there was no mention of like, sorry, you were on a waiting list for the last, you know, 6 months and we couldn't tell you which was going on. But hey, I'm not complaining. I'm happy to have squeaked by on the wait list. So I'm assuming I was pretty prompt in my application. And detailed with it. So I'm thinking that just, you know, putting that extra effort when you apply to cons that then have to curate the number of vendors and artists and things.
Right.
Being early and being detailed so that when they decide, oh, hey, you're the next on the wait list, they have no questions. Like it's all
yes.
there.
Yeah,
done,
everything is
right?
there. Completely so are you finished. A guest or just a vendor?
I'm not a guest. No, this okay. this is where HalCon is now. You have to apply to be a vendor.
Okay.
It's not just, hey, give us your money and be a vendor. It's, no, we have so many people now applying. And they like to rotate vendors and things like that. So, and I'm an artist table. I don't have a booth. I'm not a store. It's going to be an interesting year, actually, because I'm going to be splitting kind of my table a bit. Because what is arriving tomorrow is a giant box of Piper Thibodeau's Daily Paintings book.
Oh, yeah.
That is shipping this week. I've heard reports already from Kickstarter backers that have been receiving their smaller packets. So things like, see if I can remember all the names of these, the Hydrangea package, which was the digital PDF, but physical prints. So there was actually like a physical thing getting sent out to you. Plus there would have been some bonus prints. So like anybody that's getting a physical reward would have got like the note cards and the extra print. And so all the stretch goals would be in there too. And we've had a couple of reports of people getting those. Matthew Ducharme from Comics Coast to Coast sent me a nice little email just an hour ago saying that he received his book in the mail and he's really happy with it. So that's really good to hear. And he's another artist, right? So it's like, it's really cool to see and hear that kind of stuff coming in. And not to get everybody's hopes up, FYI, Sales Geek Consulting is in Virginia. Matt lives in Boston. So it really, okay. it went like three states. So that's so why his arrived so fast. So Canada and international backers, Dave is just going down the list at Sales Geek and he's going to send everything out. I believe he told me that international can take up to 2 weeks, depending on whether you're living in England or Australia and all that kind of stuff. But everybody that's a backer, if you're listening to this, you will receive an email with a tracking number for anybody that has a physical good, like whether it's a print or whether it's a book or a big book package with a bunch of stuff, like it's all in the same box and it's just all going to give you a tracking number. The digital rewards, which we did cover a little bit on the Kickstarter update, which I posted last week or this week, I think it might have been last week. So all that kind of stuff is ready. We're just kind of getting it sorted out and to Dave so then he can organize the backerkit.com distribution. So if you've got a digital reward like a PDF, or of course everybody gets the video tutorial of Piper's painting, then you'll get that in an email, the same email that you use to register with Kickstarter, and you will get it get the download link distributed through backerkit.com, which is the same place that you would have had to do your survey and give us your address and all that kind of stuff. So it'll look familiar, but it'll be delivering content as opposed to requesting content. So hopefully that will be taken care of this week. So all that content is finished, of course, because the book is done. Right. So we're just kind of we were waiting for people to start getting physical books before we started sending out all the digital stuff, just because the digital stuff gets there so fast. Like it just
right.
kind of weird. Well, yeah.
2 seconds.
Yeah. And up until today, Piper had never seen the book.
Really?
Yeah. So
really?
I got the proofs because I was the one designing the book and I went through a video call with her and we went through the book. She's seen the PDF. She's read it cover to cover. Like she knows the content. Right. And she knows the layouts and all that kind of stuff. And she works digitally, so she can kind of like, you know, envision what the thing would look like, you know, printed and whatnot.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a different feeling when you go to hold this thing. It's bright yellow and blue. Like it's a very happy feeling book. Cause I've had my copy for a couple of weeks now. Because I physically brought it home from Utah. I can't remember if I mentioned this. I don't remember if I mentioned this on the show or not. I think I mentioned it on Comics Coast to Coast, and that's why it's kind of jogging my memory. But I visited the printer in Utah, and my copies, I carried them home on the plane. So I've had them since the second week of July. But Piper had, I mean,
amazing.
Yeah, and Piper, I'm stoked, and Piper saw my books again in pictures and video and stuff, but she never actually, you know, saw her thing until today. And you were talking about having a little bit of a moment earlier when Lisa emailed. Piper was talking to me earlier on Slack, and she was saying, like, I got a little teary when the book arrived.
Well, like, I mean, like, this is literally, she's been working on it for, what, a year?
5 years, this month.
5 years. 5 years.
5 years.
Oh my God. It's her baby for, you know, it's been her baby for that long.
Yeah.
And now all this work that she's put in for 5 years is suddenly in a physical, tangible form.
Yep.
And that is really cool. That's really neat. I love Piper's art. I follow her on Instagram and I love seeing her daily paintings. I love her like sketches too. Like she'll post like a full, like fully rendered color drawing. And then she'll also do like a little sketch. And I love seeing both of them because I love seeing the artist process of like, you know, their ideas and, you know, jotting down notes and things. So I don't know. I love her art and it's so cute. I think actually I showed it to a couple people that I work with and you know, were just like, look at all these cute little drawings. And I think four people went to go follow her on Instagram the same day.
Oh, easily. So, yeah. No, yeah. I just, the fact that she's just so prolific with daily content. I mean, one is incredibly impressive. Two makes me feel very, very lazy. I mean, I'm working hard, but I'm not producing things daily. I'm producing things annually, apparently.
Yes.
Because this is about, we're coming up on about a year from when we Kickstarted. Well, the first Kickstarter would have been going last July, but the official close of the project on Kickstarter was mid-August last year. So we've been in the thick of this for a year, making the book. Planning for the book started 2 years ago and change. And then Piper is, like I said, 5 years of daily paintings and having never missed a single day. I don't even think she missed a day when she had her wisdom teeth out. Like, I'm pretty sure she had her wisdom teeth out, and I was talking to her on Slack, and I said, what are you doing? She's like, I'm painting. What?
Wow.
What? Yeah, I would be a giant baby if I had my wisdom teeth out. I was in a lot of pain. I'd be like, nope. Not happening. No. Not working
today. Well, Alistair, did you know Alistair just had his out?
He did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I credit his wisdom teeth removal to his climb in Minecraft skills. Because, sorry,
that's really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they mined his teeth and then he took that energy and just devoted it to somewhere else. I think basically what happened, for those of you that might have missed the stream, I started a Citadel Cafe Minecraft realm. And the first stream that I did from it was me introducing Alistair to the game, who has never played. And I haven't played until about 3-4 months ago, so I'm new as well. But I've learned a lot. But, you know, it helps to have someone kind of show you the ropes. I had already popped onto the server, and I had done a few things. We pretended like there was nothing. We kind of started off with just, like, rocks and sticks and just kind of went from there and kind of showed them the survival ropes and whatnot. I think the first thing he did was chop down a tree with a piece of meat, which I thought was really, really amusing.
And very skilled. I didn't think you could do that.
Yeah, well, you can punch trees with your bare hands when you first get there. I mean, it gets old really fast. It takes a long time. But he had punched a cow, I think, and received a piece of raw beef, and then used that to then chop. I mean, it doesn't speed anything up, but it just... And just the idea of, like, kind of envisioning this person in a Star Trek uniform, because that's what his skin is, of course, in the game, beating a tree with a piece of steak. Just, I don't know. Something about that, to me, was just very amusing at the time. But
that's
anyway,
really funny.
Yeah. So, but since then, he had his wisdom teeth out, and I'm home recovering, time off work. I think he's just been playing a lot of Minecraft, because every time I log in, he's discovered new things, made new decisions. He's got all this kind of stuff going on. He's got a chicken farm, like, it just all these different things.
Did he tell the story about the chickens?
But where they disappeared?
They escaped, and he was really, really mad. So he was showing me. He like showed me like his world. He's like, here's what I've done. Here's everything. He's like, so I had a chicken farm. And he put a sign in front of it that just said KFC.
KFC, yeah.
And which I thought was hilarious.
He put a sign in front of my cow farm and called it McDonald's.
I saw that one too. He likes signs. There's signs everywhere. And it's all thanks to Alistair.
Yeah, there's
set up a thing for me when I eventually get on there too. And it's really funny.
Yeah.
But he was really upset because he just basically put a fence around the chickens and that was it. And then he's like, yeah, I was there around Randall Day. They're all there. And then I signed off and I signed back on. And all of a sudden, all my chickens were gone. And he was incensed. He was like, why were they gone? And I'm like, well, you know, they can jump. And he was like, they can jump? And he was like, really surprised that they could jump. He was like, I didn't know they could jump. Joel never told me they could jump. And I was like, Alistair, if you watch a chicken, it can jump like one block and go to like the one above it. Like, you know, you have to put the fence is only what, like one block high or something?
Well, the fence is one block high and chickens can't jump over fences.
Fences block.
No, you can't jump over fences either. They block the ability to jump over them even though they're only one block high. What Alistair didn't do was light the chicken farm.
I came up
one time and I told him, I was like, dude, there's a baby zombie. He was like, what is that noise? What is this crazy noise? And I'm nowhere near the Dartmouth Meadows place where we've set up, and which is what I called it because I had to.
Okay.
And because it's this giant meadow in the middle of all these mountains, so I called it Dartmouth Meadow. I'll get to why in my internet pick later in the show. So teaser. I came up and he's like, what is that? Like, what is the noise? Can you describe it for me? Cause like I'm in a cave somewhere and we're on Skype together and he's trying to tell me like, I don't know. It's just this crazy loud banging. I was like, is it like a door? He's like, yeah. I said, is it nighttime out? I'm in a cave. I don't know. He's like, yeah, no, it's nighttime. I said, there's a zombie banging on the door. Like it's really like disturbing. It's quite loud. So by the time I got back to my log cabin, I look out because in the backyard is where Alistair has his chicken farm. And I'm looking at the chicken farm and there's a baby zombie in the chicken farm. There's no chickens and it's beating on the door trying to get out. And those things are ferocious. They're just crazy little mofos. And it was banging on the door like it was the end of the world. And I thought, so that's where his chickens went. It might not have been this one because the baby zombies can survive in sunlight. But if a regular zombie had spawned in there, it would have killed the chickens. And then when the sun came out, there would have been nothing left, right? So I'm assuming that's what happened. Because I saw the chicken coop and it was a coop. Like there was, he looked at my cow fence and said, well, I'll do that. And that's what he did. And it's totally worked. I have a chicken farm in my single player world and it works just fine, you know, without the...
I was talking as if I know, I don't really play Minecraft fully, but I could have sworn that the chickens could jump, but I'm staying correct.
Oh, they can jump.
They must have added... Sorry, go ahead.
No, all of the mobs, like chickens, rabbits, goats, and not goats, there's no goats, but sheep, llamas, like all those characters or mobs in the game, they can all jump one block in the world. They just can't jump over fences, but neither can you.
Okay. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, the only trick that works is that if you put a piece of carpet on top of a fence, you can jump on top of it and move out, but animals can't. But it looks like hella dumb. looks silly.
I can see that. And it
can also let, I think it can let other mobs in. Maybe not. Maybe zombies can't get up on carpet and that's why people use it. But I think it looks really dumb. I just use fence gates. That's kind of what they're for. we're having a lot of fun on the Minecraft server. It's just a Mojang realm that I took a free trial for. I'm probably going to keep it up because I'm really enjoying it. Eventually I might look at having a server on a different, a world on a different server, you know, like something outside of Mojang, only because I think they might be a little bit faster and they might offer some more options for things like right now, when there's more than one person online, two or more people, I think, have to sleep at the same time in order for it to change from night to day. Whereas if you're online yourself, you just hop into a bed and it changes. So if you're looking to get a lot done, you kind of have to wait for a time when there's no one else online. Because otherwise, you're just kind of stuck at night. And it's like, all right, well, it's nighttime. I don't really want to be out about, you know, chopping trees down because right now there's zombies everywhere.
Right.
But it's been really fun. I've got quite a lot of work done. I did a sugarcane farm on the stream.
I was watching that.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I made a community mine shaft, so that's really easy. People don't have to dig down. So it kind of makes it fun for people that don't have a lot of time but want to join and play. And so when you log in, it's like, oh, sweet. Like you can get iron, coal, diamonds. Like you can kind of get at them right away. You still have to mine them yourself, but at least the people that have been on there ahead of you is like, oh, here's the staircase down to the mining level that you can just use, you know. Saves a bit of time and tedium and stuff like that. And I really enjoy designing stuff. Like I like saying, all right, well, if this is where the nether portal is going to be, like, how can I make this look good? Like, how can I make it look like it's natural or part of the world or like that kind of stuff? So I've been having a lot
of fun. That's really cool.
Yeah, I've been having a lot of fun there. I'm quickly outgrowing my little log cabin and my barn though. I'm my storage is almost full. I need to kind of decide whether I'm going to build a jungle base or whether I'm going to build a mountain base or what. I think I want to build a jungle base. I've got some ideas for
like a treetop house or something.
No, actually, I was thinking about doing some sort of like jungle temple. So I don't.
But
I don't want to build in bricks because, of course, my snake mountain and my my tower from my single player world, it's all stone bricks and medieval-y type stuff. Kind of like the first thing you always build in Minecraft. Someone builds a castle. Like it's really, I don't want to say easy, but it is, there's a lot of resources to help make it look good because it's a blocky game. So castles and blocks kind of go really well together.
Right.
But I'm thinking like, one, like no gray stone if I can help it. But like, so maybe sandstones, like maybe having to clear out some desert or some clay. And I think I want to try to make it like, I guess it might be a little bit of a spoiler, but I mean, whatever. I think I want to try to make it like an alien invaded jungle.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So like,
I was thinking kind of like Jungle Book sort of, where they have like the big, like nice quartz, like beautiful old ancient buildings that like overrun with vines and stuff.
Like, oh, I'm definitely thinking pyramids. Like I'm thinking like pyramids.
Oh, okay, and cool. No,
like,
I like that.
Like pointy stuff and like maybe like hovering crystals, or like, I'm in love with the 1.12 release of all the colors. So there's concrete, terracotta with patterns. Use them sparingly, but they're cool. Concrete powder is also really nice. But then just the stained glass as well. And I've got a connected glass texture. So you can use the stained glass for all kinds of stuff, like creating kind of like a mist, or like some sort of like, you can make things look pretty alien. Like when I built the sugarcane farm, I used a combination of lime green glass and lime green concrete. And I lit it up like really heavily with like 8 pumpkins per row. It glows in the dark. It's so bright at night, right? Like it's a little bit weird, but I put enough logs and stuff in the design that it looks like it sort of fits the Dartmouth Meadows theme, but it's still like really loud.
I haven't seen it in the nighttime.
Oh, really? I think.
Yeah, no, every time you were building it, it's always been day.
If I remember, I'll send you a screenshot of it at night.
Okay.
But yeah, it's dramatically different. Like it looks okay in the day. It looks green, but it doesn't look like bright. But at nighttime, it's like, it's a little. Yes. It's like a lightsaber. It's really quite funny. Because
of course,
the brightest green in the game is the sugarcane, if I'm not mistaken. So there's, of course, tons of that. So yeah, it really kind of stands out. So that's what we've been doing there. It's been a fun community thing. Chris from Slack chat, Alistair, myself, and Shannon are all on there. And hopefully soon you as well.
And hopefully soon me. I really want to. I'm just trying to get a computer that can handle it right now. But I'm off. I mean, I have a lot of free time next week, so
yeah,
we should definitely get together at some point.
Yeah, because something that I've been getting used to, because I've never ever had the situation, is that I have two computers now, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, you can come over here and use my other one.
I know.
Yeah, it'd be fun to actually.
You're not like terribly far, so.
No, well, I'm not close, but yeah, that's same city. There's no planes involved. I consider that close.
I mean, it's maybe like a half hour bus ride or something. Maybe an hour bus ride if you're having a bad day.
Probably an hour, depending on what time of day. But yeah, I guess it depends on your bus ninja skills and all that kind of stuff. But
yes.
Anyway.
My bus ninja skills have not been honed yet, but we'll get there slowly.
So I guess that's kind of wraps up what I've been doing, you know, outside of what we've really been watching. The only announcements that I have are just Decaf is coming up in August. And Halcon, as we mentioned, is coming up in September. And those are two shows that I'm going to be at. And I am going to be at them with Piper's Books. So if you missed the Kickstarter and you're local to Halifax, Dartmouth, come find me. Just hit joelduggan.com or find me on social media. And you will find out where I'm going to be and when. And then you can come grab a book. I don't have a lot in stock for Decaf, but it's more of a trial run. There is plenty of time to get more between Decaf and Halcon. So I'm going to kind of take my sales at Decaf and kind of see what happens, and then we'll go and kind of expand that, because there's a lot more people, of course, at Halcon. It's a regional show, so it should be good times.
Right.
So we can move on to probably why you are all listening, probably not because of Minecraft, but because winter is coming, or winter is here. I feel like I should change
winter
the name of the segment. So this is where we talk about Game of Thrones every year. It's one of my favorite things to do on the Citadel Cafe. And we spoiled the living crap out of it. So it is now Wednesday. If you've not seen the show and you have somehow avoided any kind of like news or spoilers about the show until now, you should probably go and come back after you've seen it. I understand people get busy. I only just watched this week's episode like an hour before recording the show tonight. So I like time gets away from you, Minecraft. And you can, you know, end up catching it late. But if you haven't seen it, bail and come back. It's a lot more fun after you've seen it. So I'm not gonna do any more spoiler warnings. You have been so warned, and now we can kind of dive right in there. What I really liked about this episode, which is called Stormborn, it's kind of a combo with the title. They start off at the beginning of the episode talking about the giant thunderstorm that Daenerys was born in, you know, back when she was born at King's Landing, or maybe Dragonstone. But it's also kind of an homage to the end of the show where there's a big ship battle in a raging storm. Mm. And I thought it was really interesting bookends. It only dawned on me when I was doing the notes for the show. And I was writing in the show title. I was like, oh, now it makes a lot of sense. You know, it makes a lot of sense with the Ironborn, Stormborn, and kind of like the life at sea and all that kind of stuff. I thought it was a really cool parallel. But I feel like I've been kind of nattering on for a while here. So I wanted to kind of throw it to you and see, like, what were your impressions?
I loved it a lot. I think I'm a little worried about the show or about the season only being 7 episodes this time. Because I still feel like we had so much to cover, and I don't know. Do you know is this the last season of the show or
second last?
No, I understand. Like, they did it for like production value. They wanted to get all the most production value that they could out of all of these 7 episodes. I loved Dragonborn a lot. I thought it was a really, really great episode. There was one part in the middle. With Sam Tully, where he's essentially going through his, like, you know, monotonous day-to-day routine of mm-hmm. being like a mice or like a maester in training, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that went on a little bit too long.
Yes.
Personally.
Yeah.
It was almost like, you know how, like, you know, there's like a trope of like, okay, you show something 3 times and it's like, okay, there's a pattern of 3 times. Okay. You get it. Like, it's mm-hmm. going on. And there was even a point my roommate and I were watching it together, and when it happened, like, for another 6 times after that, she's like, okay, we get it. That's enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 2 more times before it even ended. So I think that was a little bit overkill, and I was a little worried about the pacing of that because we have so much story to cover.
Yeah.
We still have so many things we need to find out and so many things that we need to have explained and revealed and I feel like it ate up some of the time, so that was like my one little beef with it. But
yeah, the other problem with it is that it's a very classic medieval looking show, and it's generally filmed that way.
Right.
Those cuts are all modern comedy tropes,
yeah.
Right? Like it's like watching an episode of The Office, you know, or
right.
The Simpsons. And you're just like, well, this doesn't fit. Like, it's a funny gag, but it's the wrong genre. Like, I mean, it should be an episode of Dharma and Greg where someone is faking to puke because of something, you know, like not...
Right.
Not this. And again, it's funny if it... Like, for me, the style of comedy that they've attempted before in the show would have been Sam kind of like cleaning bedpans and feeling sick. And then right before they cut... He might have gone like, you know, and it's just enough to kind of get you a little smirk and a chuckle, and then you're on to something more serious. Because the show is generally pretty serious, especially the last couple of seasons.
Right.
So they did the same thing again this episode, not quite as long, and it wasn't meant to be funny, but it was Arya at a pub. So she's now, you know, in Westeros,
right.
Which you know from last episode. And yep. she basically stops in and she gets to see Hot Pie. This
right.
is the band of boys that were sent to the wall before Arya escaped. And she stops into the pub where he's working and baking. And she's eating bread. And there's a lot of these really close-up shots. I mean, like, almost uncomfortably close. Of her taking huge bites out of this piece of bread. This big loaf of bread. Which has to be very hard as an actor. Because... there's probably like 6 or 7 bites that are dramatic. You know that there's 4 times that in the run of a couple of takes, you know, like to get that right. You know, like, I mean, by the end of it, she must be just spitting bread in a, you know, a bucket next to her that you can't
yeah.
see, you know, like it can't be at all pleasant. I have no idea whether the actor is gluten-free or not. Like, you know, like it's just, you know, or what the stage bread tastes like. Like I have no idea. But yeah, it's a very weird scene because it doesn't, I mean, she's obviously hungry, but it doesn't feel at all, necessary.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, I feel like it's meant to just kind of make her look distracted in the scene. Basically, because Hot Pie is asking her, like, what have you done? Where have you been? It's been forever. I can't believe I thought you were a boy. You're really pretty. Like, he's doing all these very sincere, like, you're my friend. I would like to have a conversation with you. And every time he asks her something she doesn't want to answer, she takes a big bite of bread or chugs a beer or something. And so it's a very odd sort of aloof behavior. I mean, I understand that Arya's been through a lot, and she's kind of like on this mission to kill Cersei. And she's at first distracted in the pub because she's eavesdropping on a conversation next to her about like just getting information about like what's happening in the Lannister world, and these two guys are talking about like going to King's Landing, etc. And so she's kind of like, you know, I might try to follow behind these guys to see, you know, what's going on. And you can kind of see the wheels turning, and then Hot Pie interrupts, and they talk for a bit. But ultimately, this led to what I felt was one of the best moments in the show. Game of Thrones is a show where I very rarely, like, talk at the TV. I very rarely get excited and kind of, like, antsy in my chair. But Game of Thrones is one of those shows that I will shout at the television. I live alone. There's no one to talk to. I will get excited. There's, like, no, you know, you get... someone's gonna die, and you're like, no, 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 and you're like, who am I talking to? Like, that's, you know, but I get so wrapped up in it. And there's a moment where Hot Pie tells Arya that Jon is the king of the North, and she kind of goes, "Wait, what?" And she had no idea. So he fills her in, doesn't say anything about Sansa, which I thought was weird, because I thought news of that would have traveled as well. But Jon has beaten the Boltons, the Ramsay is dead, that he's come down and he's taken back Winterfell, and now he's united all of the North, and now he is the king in the North. And so there's this, you kind of see her immediately kind of like start to pack up, thank Hot Pie, take care, gotta go, see you later. So she goes out, because, and what's happening at the same time is these two guys that are going to King's Landing are leaving the pub. So she gets out there on her horse, and there's this moment, and you're like, you know that she's going to go. You get the impression that she's going to go. But like you said with this show, like, you don't really believe anything until you see it. And the moment that she turns her head, turns the horse, and instead of heading south, heads north, was like just both hands in the air, just like, yes!
Oh, that's so good.
You want to know what happened in the next scene?
So good. Yeah, no, tell me. I'm like,
John announces that he's leaving the North and going down to Dragonstone.
Oh, great. Okay.
So it's like two ships passing the night once again. Like, you'd think that George R.R. Martin would at some point let these two people get back together. So, I mean, Sansa is still in the North, so Arya will see Sansa when she gets there, but Jon won't be there. But, like, I guess episode 3 might have been too early. Like, that might have been too much. But there's just something really nice about... I'm really enjoying the Jon-Sansa dynamic, and getting Jon and Arya back together in the same room would be amazing. Because, like, these, they've not been in the same... There was a point where Bran, Rickon, and Jon missed each other by, like, a heartbeat in the North. And that was close, but it was less dramatic because Jon doesn't have the same sort of relationship with Bran that he does with Arya.
No, it's true, yeah.
You know? So, I was really, really looking forward to that. But, like, there's a scene in this episode where Jon and Davos are leaving Winterfell, and I'm like, God, I guess it's going to happen later, and it'll be more dramatic later. But I'm glad that Arya has kind of left this mission to the south, because ultimately she wouldn't have gotten very far with it. Like, I'm pretty sure Jaime Lannister knows who she is. I know that she's got this disguise thing happening, but I really don't feel like Arya sneaking in and killing Cersei would really accomplish anything.
I do.
Yeah?
If maybe not for the grand scheme of things, but definitely for Arya herself, I think that it's been her driving force for so long. Like, literally, she, you know, she goes through her list of all the people she wants to kill. And I think she's so far, I think she's killed everyone on that list except for Cersei. Or she might have had a list of everyone that she wanted to see dead, or whether or not she wanted to kill them. But when it turned up that they were already dead, she's like, okay, just makes my job easier.
Yeah.
Like, she seemed kind of chill about it.
Yeah.
I
don't know if she knows that the hound is still alive. Probably not.
No, I don't think she does either. That's a really interesting dynamic too, those two. I'd like to see them get back together as well, because they're kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of funny together. No, I'm thinking the mountain, not the hound. I get them confused.
No, the mountain is the big zombie guy with Cersei. The hound,
right.
The hound is his brother, and he's the guy that's with the Brothers Without Banners.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Everyone looks the same.
I have this struggle. There's very few. And that's one of the reasons I feel that a lot of people gravitate towards Arya, because, I mean, she's a lot older now. I think the actor's more like 22 or something like that. But when she first started, she would have been 15. She's petite anyway.
Younger.
So stature-wise, she stands out immediately, right?
Yes.
It's like Sansa with her red hair. Like, I mean, there are very few other characters in the story that have red hair that are women. And then, like, I can't think of any that are women. The only other red-haired character I can think of is I can't remember his name, but he's the Lord of the Wildlings now. He's the one that keeps on making eyes at
Brienne. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that so much.
There's no subtlety at all. It's awesome.
There's none. But you can pretty much tell, I think, who's essentially I don't mean this as like a way to undermine the actors at all either, but I think you can definitely tell who's a throwaway sort of character. Because they all look very, very similar.
Oh yeah.
And it's really interesting, actually, in the books. I know you and I, you've read probably more of the books than I have, but I do know that the characters are color coded. Oftentimes, like, you know, certain people of certain houses are typically depicted in certain colors, mm-hmm. or you know, one character is all like Varys or something is always in like one color. And another lord from another house is always in this other color. And
absolutely,
you can always tell who's who based on color. And they don't do that in the show. And there's a lot of, like, it's very trying to make it very drab and very gray and everything. So sometimes I kind of lose track on who's who and what and who belongs where. They used to, yeah.
Lannisters are always bright red, leather, and gold. You know, the Tyrells are a lot of green. The issue right now is that there's a lot of mourning going on. So everybody's in black.
Everybody's in black.
And half the shots in this past episode were nighttime. So it's like, okay, I can't see anything. Everybody's in black leather and mud, and it's pouring down rain and nighttime. So it's like, oh, God.
Great.
Yeah, it's hard to see. But no, like, the Highgarden is green. I always thought it was really strange that the Boltons, the bastard Boltons, it was pink and black were there.
Yeah.
Or flesh color in black. The flayed man. Yeah. Was always their sigil, which I thought was very odd. But then your main characters are all gray and white, which is not exactly heroic colors, right? Like all the villains and all the players in this game are all brightly colored. You know, like, you've got the Dornish are all very kind of like southern colors, a lot of warm yellows and maroons and stuff like that, very rich kind of tapestry colors. You've got I'm trying to think about the Lannisters are very brightly colored, and there was another sect that I thought was really kind of brightly colored, but I'm blanking on it right now. It's not the Riverlands, they're gray.
I would argue that the Tyrells are very brightly colored too. They're not around anymore, but I definitely argue that they were, because they a lot of blues, like Millie's Marjorie. Anyway, Marjorie wore a lot of turquoise and blue.
Yeah,
and
no, yeah, that's
gold,
true.
Gold. That's true. You know,
I wouldn't necessarily call them bad guys, though.
No, but players definitely.
Oh, I guess
they were
definitely
in the Game of Thrones for sure. Well, they were.
Yeah.
I'm so sad about Marjorie. She's one of my favorite characters.
Oh yeah, that was Yep.
That was Ruth.
I agree.
A little rough.
And then Cersei is also in mourning because of not Tommen. Is it Tommen?
It's Tommen, yeah.
So Joffrey,
well,
and
all
Tommen.
Three of her kids now.
Yeah.
Joffrey, Tommen,
right.
And Marcella.
And Marcella's dead too.
Yeah.
They reference that in this episode because
in Stormborn.
Yeah, because the whole thing starts off right where the first one left off. So Dragonstone ends with Cersei with Daenerys saying, "Shall we begin?"
And, which I loved.
Yes,
and I loved it so much.
Yeah, and in this episode, it's her and Tyrion and. See if I can remember, Ilaria, and Olena, and there's one
Oh,
more.
Elena's there too?
And Yara. So
Oh.
Yara from the Ironborn is aligned with Daenerys. The Dornish are aligned with Daenerys, and Varys set that up. That was the end of last season. That was
Right.
like that
No,
was
I
like
remember that.
That was
Okay.
the big reveal.
Right, I remember that.
And then Olenna, this was Daenerys asking Olenna to be behind her. And there's a really cool conversation that happens because Daenerys rips right through Varys, like up one side, down the other, because basically she's just like, listen, you little spider, you have served three or four kings in your lifetime. You have flipped on all of them, including sending out an assassin to kill me under Rob Baratheon's orders. And so she's point blank, like, who asked him? Who asked, you know, who gave the order to send the assassin? And Varys is just, it's really cool because Varys is just giving her point blank. Robert Baratheon told me to do it. He's my king. So I listened. That's the deal. You're my queen now.
Right.
Like, but he's like, he's trying to convince her while she's like listing all the things where like, so you tried to kill him. You killed my dad. Like you just, you know, not directly, but like he's the one that puts all the wheels in motions. Like if Varys' little spies didn't let Robert Baratheon know that the Mad King was mad, then Robert Baratheon wouldn't have been trying to take over the throne in the first place. Like, Varys'
right.
little strings are just kind of everywhere.
Yeah,
and,
he's sneaky.
Yeah,
he's
but
a sneaky guy.
So she rips into him, and then he gives a fantastic speech about who he's behind and why. And he's like, I got news for you, little girl. It's not any of you people. Because I grew up poor. I grew up in the gutter. I was taken advantage of. I was sold into slavery. I was castrated because of some hairy ritual thing that somebody did to me. Like, it's all happened to me. And at the not the behest, but in a world where you, the ruling class, have deemed peaceful. By the way, you're not very good at keeping the peace, you know. So he says that my loyalty is to the people. It's to the lowborn, it's to the people in the gutters. It's like, if you can't rule over a world where these people are safe, then you're not the queen for me, basically. He's like, if you want undying and unwielding devotion, tell Grey Worm to take my head off now. But if you want someone that will watch and criticize and all this kind of stuff, then you have my, you know, undying allegiance. I think you are the best for this world. And Varys
yeah.
also knows what's coming from the north too, right? Like, he knows love. So
yeah.
So it was really cool. And then of course Daenerys, her response is basically like, yeah, but if you've got things to say, if you've got criticisms and these little whispers are going to be had, I need you to make one promise to me. You're gonna talk to me to my face if I'm failing the people, then you need to tell me to my face and help me fix it. So there was a really cool kind of balance there.
I love Daenerys. I keep thinking of her story arc from when you first see her in season
mm-hmm.
one to now, and how much of a powerhouse she's become. I mean, like, she kind of lost her way in the middle there a little bit when she decided, okay, in the middle of, I mean, now I see it as more of a strategic move. There's a lot of fans who are kind of giving Dany a little bit of flack because she was like, okay, in the middle of your conquest to take over the Iron Throne again, you're gonna also liberate all these slaves and become queen of all these cities. Okay, that doesn't seem like a very apropos plan, but she's amassed this huge army of people, not just the Unsullied, but also like other people who've like, you know, offered to join her. And she's so powerful, and it's a loud kind of power, but it's also not it's loud and it's scary, but it's not malicious. Does that make sense? I don't know if that makes any sense. But no, when I compare her and Cersei is terrifying.
Yeah.
In like a bad way.
Yeah,
whereas
because
Dany is terrifying in like I command your respect sort of way.
Yeah. And Daenerys is getting more demanding. And I'm trying to remember where she picked that up from. Because it's not something that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I don't like it per se. I
Like
don't
when
think
she
it's
gets
a.
like this whole like you will obey me, you will bend the knee or else sort of stuff. And I'm not really sure where she picked that up.
I think it's people telling her over time. It's, oh, you're queen. You're gonna be queen. You are the queen. I think it also came a little bit from being Khaleesi.
You know what? I maybe from Khal Drogo and that kind of stuff, having to be strong in order to get respect. Like, yeah, I can
right.
sort of I can sort of get that. I think also some of her. I mean, she seems angry a little bit.
Yes.
And
Well,
I think I'm forgetting just how much time and how much energy she spent into freeing the slaves, and how upset she was at slavery. And I think that that might have just been like either one too far in the past with like, you know, 2 years ago on the show or like whenever that was going on. So it's not quite as fresh in your mind. But also I'm just kind of, it just feels weird because it does not feel like the right way to approach Westeros, which they've addressed in this meeting. But at the same time, there's this little powwow between just Olenna Tyrell and Daenerys later on. I mean, two actors that I would watch read the phone book, by the way, like Diana Rigg, who plays Olenna. I mean, she's been acting for her entire life, I would say.
I love her.
She
I
is
love her.
So good. So good.
I just love Olenna as a character anyway. Like, she's just so prickly, and I love that. I love prickly old ladies. I don't know. I think there's this. She's so sassy, and I love it. Anyway, continue. I'm sorry.
No, she's got one of the best lines in the show in this little chat. She's talking to Daenerys, and like, you know, your man there is pretty clever. I've known a lot of clever men in my life, and you want to know how I survived? And Daenerys just kind of looks at her and gives her an eyebrow, like, you're going to tell me anyway. I ignored all of them. Just like,
I love her.
Yeah, this is amazing. But the thing is, like, Olenna is, it's hard to read her because she's coming from grief and revenge over, gosh, what's her daughter's name? The one that got blown up?
Marjorie.
Marjorie.
No, that's her granddaughter.
Granddaughter, sorry. Sorry, yeah, granddaughter. Granddaughter Marjorie, who was the queen. And she's just, it's really hard to figure out her intentions. Now, she's telling Daenerys, you're not a sheep, you're not any of these lords and ladies, you're a dragon. So be a dragon. Now, you have to kind of let that sink in because, like, are dragons supposed to be ferocious? Are they supposed to be majestic? Are they supposed to be both? Like, there's, but in the conversation on its surface, you the impression you get is like you should be more aggressive, is what she's trying to say. But I don't know. Like, I'm not sure. Like, one of the things that they're very clear on is that they don't want to have a huge war and destroy Westeros because then Daenerys doesn't want to rule over the ashes, right? Like, you can't necessarily
right.
force people to follow you. You kind of have to win them over. So what they've done is, the plan is Asha is going to take her ships and the Dornish are going to take their army and they're going to put a siege on King's Landing. So they're not going to do a full out attack. They're going to just rip it of food, water, supplies, just kind of basically siege it down to the point where the people of King's Landing are looking at Cersei like, we're dying here and you're doing nothing or you can do nothing. And then the Unsullied and the Dothraki at Tyrion's idea are sailing and attacking Casterly Rock, which I called, I think, last episode, is that I'm pretty sure that Tyrion and Casterly Rock are going to have some sort of reunion, and I don't think it's going to be pretty.
I don't either.
No, Tyrion
I don't
is...
think Tyrion and Casterly Rock is ever going to be very pretty.
No, I think essentially he kind of calls it and says, like, look, this whole kingdom is run by the money. The money is in Casterly Rock. So if we put our foot down there, not only are we handicapping the continent, but you're also stomping on the family home of Cersei and Jaime, right? Like, he's just, and I know how to get in. Like, he's, you know, he's just, he's, you know that he's going straight for it. And it's a good plan. Like, I agree with it. It goes to hell in a handbasket in the first 20 minutes, but like that's
of course it does.
Yeah, like it just. But the meeting in that sort of battle is where you kind of go, okay. So one of the things that Tyrion is doing is not necessarily staying Daenerys' hand, because I don't think she plans on destroying everyone and having.
No, I think she's become a bit more tactful than that. Like yeah. She's. Yeah, she tries to win. I think she wins people's favor in too much brutality sometimes, but she does try to. She is for the people.
Yeah.
Or more than anyone else, I would say.
Yeah, but and I think it's just me remembering dragons attacking and breathing fire, but like they're breathing on fire on ships of soldiers. They're not breathing fire down city streets. It's a different sort of dynamic, and I think the problem is that they're playing. And writing Daenerys so angry right now that you need these conversations that she has with Tyrion, where she has a conversation with him, and then in a big meeting with everybody, she actually repeats what he says to her, to them. And he kind of looks up at her like, oh, so she's listening to me. That's good. Because she's saying the same thing, about the money and, how we can control things and how we don't want to rule the ashes. Because that was a conversation that she had privately with him, and then she repeats the quote. And I think that kind of stuff is there. It's in there to kind of like, stay your opinion of what her plans are,
yeah.
And kind of keep you focused and like, okay, so it's going to be a little bit more strategy. And I mean, we've been waiting for 2 years to figure out like what's Daenerys going to do? Where is the story going to take us when she gets there? And I'm loving it. I mean, Cersei is trying to twist like the Dothraki horde and the savages that have invaded our lands brought to you by the Mad Queen, blah, blah, blah. And all this kind of, it's ultimately uninteresting. It's important to know what Daenerys is going to try to do. The scenes at King's Landing were mostly just posturing and more throne room bullshit. But the one conversation that was worth paying attention to was Jaime and Lord Randall, which is Sam's father.
Right.
Randall Tully. So he is one of the loyal houses to Daenerys at the moment. You don't necessarily...
The Tully?
Sorry, not Daenerys. The Tullys, I meant Lannisters. He's loyal to the Crown. Right. He's loyal to King's Landing. His position has been since the Baratheons took over. There's a lot of changes. You don't get the impression that he's necessarily on board, but you don't get the impression that he's going to break his word either. However, Jaime asks him to now... go against the Tyrells. So Tully? Is it? I can't remember what it is.
It's Tully.
Is it Tully? Sam Tully? I thought it was Tarly.
No, Tully.
I only have the first name in the notes here. Let me just see to make sure I'm not making that. Yeah, Tarly.
Oh, it is Tarly.
Yeah. Tully
Who's Tully then? There is House Tully.
That's Riverlands. That's Catelyn Stark.
Right. Right. That's, okay, cool.
And again, more names that sound very, very similar, right?
Goddamn.
Yeah, right? So Randall Tarly, he has a conversation with Jaime, and Jaime says, I need you to join us or not. And that means going against Highgarden. Highgarden is now an enemy of... the Lannisters, because she's sworn revenge on us. And he doesn't say it out loud, but the conversation is kind of like Randall kind of saying, you kind of blew up her granddaughter. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
And there's something going on there. I don't remember any other scenes. I'm just kind of getting this vague kind of memory. Randall Tarly has known Olenna Tyrell his entire life. I get the feeling that there was a romance at some point.
Oh, I can see it. Yeah. Absolutely.
So he's just like, he says it. I've known her in my entire life. I'm not going to go against my word and go against them. So then Jaime says, well, you got to choose, my way or the highway, essentially. So, and then they cut. So you don't know exactly, but I've got this feeling, that not only is Tarly going to see the light and side with Daenerys, but I've got a funny feeling that Sam is going to get involved, and there's going to be kind of a smoothing over or some sort of validation between Sam and his dad. I feel like that's going to be coming because we all know that Sam's got like the dragon class thing sorted out. He's quickly digging into this maester stuff and becoming more and more knowledgeable as time goes by. He did send word to John in the north that Dragonstone is sitting on top of Dragonglass, which is why John accepted Daenerys' invitation to come and bend the knee. I don't know if he's going to bend the knee, but he's certainly going to talk to her. But he needs to go and talk to her and say, like, look, this castle that you're in is sitting on top of the one thing that can save everybody. So FYI, like, we should probably work together. And that's all because Sam delivered that information. So I feel like at some point, Sam, John, Daenerys, and Randall Tarly are all going to be either in the same room or the same vicinity, and there's going to be news of Sam's involvement in saving the world, or some sort of, you know, the validation of like this maester thing is really worth it. So I think that's going to come, and I think that this was kind of like the spark that kind of gets Randall Tarly rolling towards Daenerys is Jaime asking him to go against Orlena, and I just don't think that's going to happen. I
can't see that happening either. You know, I really don't. I mean, because I don't know. I like the Lannisters as villains. I do. I like Cersei as a villain. I feel like Jaime has the potential to. I feel like he could go either way. Honestly, I know he's fairly loyal to Cersei, but I think if you know he's pushed enough, I think he's willing to drop that. I do.
Yes, especially if she starts going out of her gourd.
Well, she's kind of already started.
Yeah, no, but I agree. I don't think he's going to, because the thing is, like, the kids are gone, right? Like
the kids are gone.
The anchor,
yeah, that's it.
The anchor has been lifted. I feel like without those kids there, he's going to realize kind of what his sister is.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I don't know whether Tyrion is going to bring that around or what.
Oh, I wonder. That'd be really interesting. Because Jaime genuinely loves Tyrion. Like, he genuinely loves him. Yeah. Like, as brothers. Like they are, you know, as, you know, despite issues or whatever, like, mm-hmm. you know, he is always going to be in his court, sort of.
Yeah.
And Cersei is just not.
No.
I just want to talk about the actors for a second. Their names are eluding me. I'm terrible at that.
Which Lena characters? Dunham? I got a list up here.
Cersei and Jaime.
Jaime is Nikolai Coster-Waldau.
Yep, that sounds right.
And Lena Headey. Headey.
Lena Headey.
There's no L. Headey.
Headey.
Yeah.
Headey. I'm terrible with names. I'm awful with names. No, I love watching their scenes together. They always make me... I'm so interested, but I'm always really uncomfortable whenever I watch their scenes together. Especially in the... I'm going to reference... Because I actually watched it. I'm going to reference episode one again. When, you know, she's walking over the map that's on the floor. There's someone painting the map there. And, you know, they're, like, planning a battle plan, I suppose, and they're having a conversation about their children. And in this middle of this conversation, they're just like, you're also siblings. So it's this weird, like, disconnect of, like, mm-hmm. discomfort, but also, like, you also care about it in a weird way. I don't know, it's such a really interesting dynamic between those two characters, and it's gross, but it's also, you just can't look away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so impressive, especially those two, that they've managed to... you know, do that and have it work in some weird way. It really, really works.
It's believable on both levels. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And it's weird that it is, but it is, and it's great. And I it's really hard to wrap your head around,
mm-hmm.
but I think they're fantastic actors. Like this show, man, is, I can't imagine. It's like a, you know, acting Olympics almost, I think.
Yes. Yeah, there is some
close to.
Very, very good actors, especially when they start switching languages and stuff. Like there's part where the red witch there, Melisandre, she goes to Dragonstone to, you know, talk to Daenerys because she knows what's coming. And they speak in High Valyrian, and it's just like really, really cool. And I really enjoy that kind of stuff. The actor that I think this season is really kind of, I think, come into her own. And I want to say maybe even last season as well. But certainly the acting over the last couple of years, but just the character in general, is Sansa Stark, Sophie Turner.
Yeah, I love Sophie. I
really enjoy her. And I what I like so much about, what was eye-opening for me was, even though it's not a great movie, X-Men Apocalypse, she plays Jean Grey. And yeah. I mean, she doesn't look very different. She's still got long red hair. They dress her in modern clothes. But like ultimately, it's Sophie Turner, right? It's not like there's this huge dramatic change. She's not in a crazy costume for most of it anyway. But she's incredibly different.
Incredibly different. She is, yes.
I think, I mean, a little bit of that is that she puts on an American accent, which I don't know why British actors can do that so well. But it's kind of uncanny. But that was the moment where I was just like, wow, like just, it's, I not once in that movie did I think about Sansa Stark. Right.
Yeah.
Like in X-Men. Right. And I think that, I mean, that to me is one of those hallmarks of actors that really have the subtleties down. Like they obviously spend a lot of time with that kind of stuff. One of my favorite actors is Tom Hanks. He's Tom Hanks in every movie he's in, but he's still a completely different character. And you don't think about him as Tom Hanks. You think about him as, you know, John Smith or, you know, whatever the character is he's playing. Yeah. You know, like thinking about the difference. I mean, some things aside, like Forrest Gump was like a big kind of diversion from that. But like Castaway, Larry Crown, I think it was Larry Crown. There's a bunch of other movies where he's just kind of like your average. Well, the, the big... Dan Brown series, Da Vinci Code stuff.
Like, right.
I don't remember Robert Langdon is his character name.
Yes.
It's Tom Hanks, but it's still the guy from Fort, like, but not the guy from Castaway and like not the other people that he's played. And I really feel like that's a hallmark of that kind of stuff. Whereas the reverse, Tom Cruise. Is the same Tom Cruise in every movie that I've ever seen. It's just the same. He plays the same guy. Like it's like.
I totally agree.
You're not watching this character. You're watching Tom Cruise do an action movie. Like it's not at all, the same thing. And I can't explain to you what the difference is. It's not like I dislike those movies. I mean, Mission Impossible were fun. You know, like it's not like I don't like them, but they're not to me. You know. Magic.
I think it's you're pulling off of subtle like character traits, I think, as well, and it's all in the way that the character holds himself. Like Sansa is, you know, she was she's a noble lady, like she's from a noble house, you know, and grew up as like, you know, the oldest daughter of a you know, noble house. So I think she had a couple different separate privileges. And then if you look at Jean Grey, who was, you know, probably awkward and kind of nervous. She had this mutant power and she's kind of kept to herself a whole bunch. Like it's just the way she holds herself a little bit. And then, you know, with the whole thing with the Phoenix and everything, I don't know if that's a spoiler for anybody. But no, if you've read comic books at all, Jean Grey is the Phoenix. It's out there in the universe. If you
I think that's been out there since X-Men the
80s. Trilogy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I'm not worried about it anymore. You know, like she deals, you know, she has this really, really intense power within her called the Phoenix, and the way she kind of holds it back a little bit, and she's a bit more, you know, awkward. But Sansa is sort of become this, you know, still like noble lady, but still like a powerful noble lady.
Hmm.
I don't know. It's really interesting. I loved the way that Sansa has developed throughout the series. I didn't dislike Sansa. I know that she was a very, very hated character in the first couple of seasons. A lot of people didn't like her very much. And she's like, I get a lot of hate mail about Sansa. I don't know why. I don't really get it. Cause I think she could see that there was something else in her. And she was a little girl and she had, you know, as her words, I was a stupid little girl with stupid dreams. And she was literally that. And she always, you know, references that time in her life, I think now to be like, she knows that she's not like that anymore. She's realized, but she still wants people to believe that she's like this so that they, I guess, not undermine her. What's the word I'm looking for? Underestimate her, right? Because I think she has so much power and we haven't seen just how much power that she has yet. I don't think she's really figured out how much that she has yet.
Yeah. Well, she got it. she got that kind of coming at her. Like, one of the things I've been really enjoying about the season so far is the dynamic between Jon and Sansa. It started last season, you know, where she was speaking out with him and really kind of giving her opinion, but also Jon's open to it, you know? And she told him in episode one, like, he's like, I'm trying to do well, you know, by our father. And she's like, our father's dead because he lived hard and fast by this set of rules, unbending. Yeah. You got to bend. I don't want to lose you too. Like, Rob is dead because he did the same thing. Like, you're following in these two footsteps, and they both ended up dead. So could you not do that? And she doesn't plead with him, but she kind of like points out the stupidity of this walking this line in this world of gray that we talk about on, you know, when we talk about Game of Thrones all the time. And he eventually sort of, in the conversation, he kind of yields, but he really kind of hands it over in this one, because when Jon announces in front of all the lords and ladies in the North in his council that he's going to Dragonstone, it's probably a trap, or that's how he sees it. But he has to go anyway because of this dragon glass, because of the three dragons that, you know, fire kills whites and white walkers. Who's got fire? Daenerys. So let's go make friends. You know, like, this is his philosophy. Yeah. But they're talking about, you know, you can't just unite the North and then take off. Like, you have to, like, the North has to be maintained. And Jon's like, yeah. So while I'm gone, Sansa's in charge. And I mean, she is not totally shocked, but she's half shocked. basically, you know, she's saying, like, you know, you need to listen to me more. You need to have more confidence in me. And Jon's like, all right, money where your mouth is, kid.
I'm so excited for that, though. Yeah. I think that's going to be, I don't know, just the evolution of Sansa. Like, you know, I think it was episode or season 4 or 5.
It was fine.
After she, you know, she dyed her hair and she, you know, was like, you know, disguised as, like, I think one of Peter's cousins or something. Like, she's wearing that black dress with, like, the feathers on the shoulders. Mm-hmm. And she totally, her entire personality totally changed. Like, people didn't even really recognize her. That is kind of, I think, was like a huge turning point for her. And now I think that she's ready. She's ready to do that. I think she's probably going to be a little nervous at first, but I think she's going to rock that
lot. And Littlefinger was smiling.
Right.
And everybody was uncomfortable.
Oh, he's creepy. I hate him. I hate him so much.
Everybody that's watching the show is just so happy to see Jon and Sansa together. So happy to see them back at Winterfell and alive. And yet, somehow, well, not somehow, because he's the one that swooped in and helped out and saved the day in the Battle of the Bastards, that's the only reason he's still there. It's the only reason they're showing. It's like, they need him. They need his army. Like, they need him to fight with the North or defend against the South or whatever. Essentially, I think, is what Jon is eventually going to ask of him is, like, look, we all have to go fight these White Walkers and win. I don't want you anywhere near me. But dear loyal friend and, you know, countryman, could you keep the Lannisters from coming after our rear while we duel, you know, this whole North battle for the world thing? That's my impression is. And there's a moment where Jon, before he leaves Winterfell, goes down to pay respects to his dad in the crypt, and he's there by himself, and Littlefinger comes up. And you can see Jon kind of roll his eyes as Littlefinger starts talking, and he eventually, you know, walks away. It's like, you don't belong here. You know, I've got nothing to say to you. You know, and then Littlefinger says, well, you might want to start with thank you. Well, that stops Jon in his tracks, and you can kind of see this, like, sigh of restraint. It's like, God, I need your army. It's the only reason you're not on a pike right now. And then Littlefinger says something about Sansa. Well, Jon has him up against the wall in a chokehold in, like, 3 seconds flat. And again, one of those moments in my living room by myself, we're going, yes, just end him, like, just. I know you can't, but he's doing the one thing that we've all wanted to do for 6 seasons that no one can do because it's always in, like, this public theater of, like, the court or this thing, or he's got Sansa. Like, he's the reason why some of these kids are alive. So, like, you can't go after Peter Baelish like the way you want to. Jon can.
Jon will.
Oh, it's satisfying. It's so, and, like, and he doesn't, all he says was, like, touch my sister, and I will kill you myself. Thank God. One line. I was like,
and then, you know, she also has Brienne too, and Brienne is more than aware of what's happening, and yes. Sansa's more than aware of what's happening. Yes. She knows exactly what he wants.
Yeah, precisely.
And she's not at all interested. I loved the interaction she gave me. Kept trying to like talk to her and like, you know, say something witty, and she was like, "Don't bother."
Yeah.
You don't have to have the last word. It was probably going to be something witty anyway.
Yes. Something. Yeah. I remember that from the first episode. Yeah. No. So like, and there's no interactions between her and Littlefinger this episode. It's all Littlefinger and Jon, but man, it's satisfying to kind of see that flip.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And then the end of the episode is, true to form with episode two, there's always something big, and kind of dramatic. The episode one is a lot of chess pieces, a lot of shuffling around, a lot of posturing. And then episode two is usually when things like Joffrey dies or, you know, other stuff like that. And this, what happens is the battle that we saw being set up at the beginning meeting with Tyrion and Daenerys and Olenna and all those guys. Asha and, I'm struggling to remember her name, I have to look at my notes, Ilaria are going to gather their troops and get the Dornish troops and then go and do this siege of King's Landing. They're intercepted by Euron and his Black Fleet. So obviously when he says, you know, to Cersei in episode one, obviously the way to a woman's heart is with a gift. I will not return to King's Landing until I have one. Essentially, he's kidnapped Yara, his niece, and he's kidnapped Ilaria and Tyeen, who is the only Dornish princess left alive. Obara and Nymeria are killed in this battle.
Yep.
And
man.
Yeah. So if you don't remember, Tyeen is the one with the daggers. Nymeria and Obara, one of them is the one with the whip. They each have a very unique weapon.
Yes. Yeah, I remember them.
I don't remember.
I love them, actually. I think they're great.
Yeah, and they were big in season six. Euron kills them both, personally. Like, he goes in battle with them, both of them, and owns them. It's kind of brutal. And there's a lot... It's a brutal scene. There's a lot of really graphic stuff that happens. But it's not slow. Like, it's not... It's played out like these battles should be. Like, it is fast, furious. There's no posturing. There's no dancing. It's swing, swing, miss, you're dead. Like, that's just how it all goes. There's a little bit more of a battle that happens between the Sand Snakes and Euron, because both parties involved in the fight are super skilled. A couple other people are dropping around them, but it goes on a little bit longer, but not in, like, you killed my father, prepared to die. Sort of like, you know, long montage of back and forth. It's over really, really fast. And Euron wins handily over both the one-on-one opponents and then again against the whole fleet. Like, they basically just sail through them and evaporate them. There's nothing left. And it's one of those moments where you're just like, shit. This was supposed to go really well for Daenerys, but like, I guess that's not happening. And you learn quite quickly that Euron Greyjoy is batshat crazy. Like, the dude he's not all stones or upstairs. It's
He's,
I mean, that was sort of clear. He's a little Jack Sparrow-ish, you know, in the throne room in episode one. But like, now he's like, it's like Jack Sparrow and the Joker kind of together. Right? Like, this is what we're getting. You know?
Yep.
Like, I'm trying to remember. Do you remember Braveheart with Mel Gibson? Yes. Do you remember the Irish King?
Oh.
The Irish guy that he's the king, but he's just down in the trenches with everybody else because he thinks it's fun.
Yes.
You know, like, it's my island, that guy.
Yeah.
This is the madness, but evil. That I see in Euron Greyjoy. You know, like, it's just, he's laughing the whole time that he's decapitating people with axes. Like, it's just brutal.
He's crazy. I kind of like him, but I also don't want him to stay alive.
No, it's like, he's a good villain, right? Like, you like him because right. he's scary. It's the same reason why people like Ramsay Bolton, is because he's...
Oh, I actually didn't. Creepy everything as about hell. Ramsay. Great actor. I hate Ramsay. I'm so glad he was off the show. I'm glad he's done.
I get
the appeal behind him, but I think he's the type of villain that just made me so uncomfortable that I was glad when he was gone.
Yeah.
It was like Joffrey. Like, I loved Joffrey. I love to hate Joffrey, but I was glad when he was gone. I think I'm going to be glad when
all your favorite characters are safe when these people are no longer in the world.
Exactly. Yeah, more or less.
Well, the people that are remaining anyway.
But
the one other thing about this last battle scene, just from a technical standpoint, like, it must have been just incredibly challenging to shoot. Like, it is, I don't want to say flawless because I just saw it the one time, but it is an absolute roller coaster ride. It's chaotic, but yet all of the important things that happen, you get to see.
Oh, good.
You can still see Yara. You can still see Euron in the battle. Sometimes it's just a silhouette, but, like, again, the actors are so good. Just like, oh, that's the way that he walks, so that's totally him. Or that's the guy laughing, so that's obviously Euron. You know, like, there's a lot of stuff like that. And it's like, it is just, it's just so, so well done. It's right up there with, like, the third episode of season one of Daredevil, where it's all one cut.
Really?
When he's saving the kid from the kidnappers and he's, like, destroying everybody. This fight isn't all one cut in Game of Thrones, but it's similar in caliber to those huge fight scenes with, like, you know, 20 stunt people and swapping of characters. And I mean, there's cuts in this one, so it's not quite that technical, but just the pace of it is relentless. Like, I was on the edge of my chair. I had to lean forward because I didn't want to miss anything. Because it's just like, you're watching this fight that's got three or four or five main characters in it, all of whom are on important missions, good and bad, and everybody is swinging willy-nilly, and you're watching people drop like flies. And you're just like, oh, shit, I have to pay attention here. Like, this is going to get bad fast. You know, and you kind of get the impression that Euron's not going to die just because he was just introduced. Like, you kind of don't get that feel.
Yeah.
But the rest of the characters on the boat have all been around for, like, four seasons. So you're like, oh, God. Like, how is this going to end?
That's so scary.
Yeah. So it's really worth watching, like, and paying attention to that particular scene. I really enjoyed it. And then to end things off, I have kind of a dry note. Arya, on her way to Winterfell, encounters a pack of wolves that surround her and her horse.
And
you kind of know it's coming, right? And eventually, a direwolf comes out of the woods behind her, size of a horse. And I guess it's supposed to be Nymeria? The colors are the same. That's who Arya thinks it is. So she puts her sword down and she reaches out to not pet her, but kind of like reach out in peace and talk to her. And the wolf just kind of stops snarling and walks away, as does the pack. And that's it. And you're just kind of like, that was pointless. This whole episode is neither improved or, you know, taken down a notch if you just delete the scene. Like, it was absolutely pointless. And it made no sense. It would have made a lot of sense if it was Nymeria by herself. And if
to have the pack, though.
And there was no indication outside of, like, she was snarling and looking like she was going to attack, and then she kind of just goes back down to having, like, puppy eyes and being just a regular, you know, husky-looking dog, but obviously, you know, the size of a horse. There was no love there. Like, there was no, she didn't let her pet her. So it's just like, well, it's not, like, it just didn't seem like it was worth it. If it was going to be a reunion, then that should have been a reunion. So it was kind of pointless. I understand the teasing of having her go to see John and having John leaving. Like, I get that that's kind of like just drama for drama's sake and it makes everybody wait a little bit longer. But there's a reason why John is going down to see Daenerys. If that reason wasn't there, it would be the same thing.
Like, yeah.
It's just this incomplete moment for the sake of the script. Whereas John and all that kind of stuff, there's a solid, solid reason and timing for why that's happening. But then this thing with the wolf with Arya, as much as I like the dire wolves, it wasn't really needed. It didn't make, you know, didn't really make the cut. Plus, there's all this stuff where the horse is getting really, really nervous and all this stuff. And then, of course, on the scene with Arya and Nymeria, you don't know where the horse is and there's no noise. Like, there's a dozen wolves around them. You'd think the horse would be losing its shit, right?
Right, no.
You know, but there's just nothing. So it just didn't really sit well with me. It felt tagged on.
Right. I saw a thing online about that scene because I saw a couple, I'm on Tumblr all the time, so I saw a couple of GIFs regarding that scene. And someone, like, basically put the whole scene into, like, a bunch of little GIFs, and it was like, you know, they just saw her walk away. I didn't see the other wolves. It was basically just a shot of Arya and Nymeria, supposedly Nymeria. And then Nymeria, like, going away. And then someone commented, they ran out of their animal budget. And that was it. That was just, it's like, they probably just ran out of their animal budget.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I saw that, sort of.
And her line is like, no, that's not you. That's what she says. It's like, well, if it wasn't Nymeria, or if you weren't sure, why the hell did you put your sword down? Like, I'm not sure what the significance is supposed to be. I think the issue is that the scene was so short that it
didn't... Yeah, I'm wondering if that will come into play again later, though. I'm wondering, I don't know, I don't want to say that they'll do anything, like, there's thought in everything and that, you know, everything's important, because there's definitely been some moments where it hasn't been important, but I'm wondering if that might come into play later.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that's why they felt the need to tag it on.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I have to remember, too, is that, like, Nymeria was only with Arya for, like, a couple months, maybe, before they got separated.
Well, I guess. Yeah, I guess.
It's Rob and John that have had these long relationships with their direwolves, you know, and that this
right.
they feel. So you get the impression that that would be the way with the other kids, but...
Yeah.
And we haven't seen... Rickon and Shaggy Dog at all.
Yeah, I don't know if Rickon's still alive.
Yeah, I can't remember where they dropped him.
I don't know that he is. I don't think he is still alive. I think the only Stark boys that are left are,
Bran and John.
No,
yeah, Rickon's still alive. They sent him off with, I can't remember.
Oh, right.
I can't remember the name of them. It's the frog people. Again, I don't remember their names, but they've taken them up to a different northern kingdom. I don't remember the name of it right now, but they're not dead. I know that much.
Okay.
I don't know where Ghost is, though. That's the other thing. I think John maybe left Ghost at the wall. I can't really remember.
Well, then we know that, you know, Sansa's lady was...
Well, yes, I know. Well, we know that she died.
Was killed right away, and...
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if... Yeah, no, I'm just trying to think back on Nymeria, and I wonder if... Because Nymeria was the one who bit Joffrey.
Yeah, and so she had to throw stones at her to send her away, and that happened before Ned Stark died. Like, that was season
one. Yeah, that was... Yeah, it's been kind of, a few years since then. I wonder if that's sort of a symbolism for, like, you're coming home. Like, she's on her way back home.
Yeah, it could be.
And, you know, or she's not, or maybe, it's, you know, she's saying, no, that's not you. Isn't like, no, you're not a Stark anymore, maybe. I don't know. Like,
that's the thing that I wasn't sure what they meant by that. It's like, well, there's like, it wasn't clear enough because the line did not correlate with the scene strongly enough. What I thought would have been a better way to handle it, and this is just, you know, me singing my own opinion, is as Arya was traveling to Winterfell, if Nymeria or a wolf that looked an awful lot like her, a direwolf, was tracking her from afar, you know, like if Arya was looking up on the hillside and seeing this direwolf, and then she'd travel a couple hundred miles, and then she'd look up and then, oh, on that rock face, that's the same wolf. Like, just like this, kind of like this... kind of nod to, like, following her for a reason and recognizing that it's a direwolf, but then not having it be even close enough to be an interaction, whereas the direwolf is just remembering and recognizing, but also not enough to go and interact. Like, I felt like that might have been, like, a stronger message, but I don't know. Again, it's hard to know because we're so past where the books are now. You don't get any of the inner monologue. You don't get any of the story leading up to it. You don't get any of that. So it's hard. I don't envy the people making the show with the amount of fandom that's out there and the unwritten books, like, man, talk about pressure. You know,
I think at some point, though, as a creator at that point, I was watching a couple of interviews. It's like, you're not going to please everybody at that point.
No, of course.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, it's to the point now where people, you know, people who are fans of the show are fans of the show and they trust the show. And they're like, okay, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And we know that the show is being written off of an outline of the next books that are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that even there might be some creative license that might be happening, which is fine. Because I don't know, I never get up in arms about a book or anything that is like written material that's being converted into visual material. I never really get concerned about things that are changed or things that are altered, because legally you have to change some of it. But also I like, it's an adaptation. It's inspired by. It's not, I am literally taking word for word every single thing that happened in this book and putting it onto a screen.
Mm.
You can't do that. You have, you know, you just don't have the time.
No, exactly.
So the fact that, you know, they've managed to do as well as they have done with the, you know, the time they have and the information that they have, is amazing. It's really great. And I love that they're still continuing. I love that we don't have to wait years until these books are finished.
Yeah. No, I agree.
So,
I agree. I mean, I think the issue is just that because the Game of Thrones is such a good show and so much of this episode is so great, that one scene just probably just stands out by comparison. It's like they're probably their own worst enemy, right? Like, it's just like you have all these scenes that are fantastic and then you've got this one that's like, well, it's not the best, but like, it's still, we like it. And then you're just like,
well, it's all right.
Then when you put it all together, you're like, crap.
Yeah.
We need to have it in there. But it doesn't really, this is a really good episode. It's like, this is this one little thing that kind of, like, if it was, it's one of those things where, like, if it was in another episode, it actually might do better. Because, if it was in, the timing wouldn't work. But still, it's just, it's one of those things that I didn't notice. But anyway, that's all I have to say on the episode. I mean, obviously it was a lot, but I'm really liking the season. I have a hard time sitting down and starting to watch it. When Game of Thrones was first out there, Monday morning breakfast, I was totally watching the show from the night before. But here it is Wednesday. I've had access to it since Monday, but I just haven't really, I'm not sure what it is. I think it's just, it's a different pace the last two seasons. And, I'm feeling it might be quicker this season. I'm feeling like season 7, they're doing a little bit more, like they're setting the stage. I feel like the second episode is setting the pace. I'm wondering kind of now what's coming next. So I feel like I'm going to be a little bit more excited when the next episode comes out. I always stop watching when they say next time on Game of Thrones. I immediately stop the player. I'm just like, nope. I don't know.
Oh, I can't. I have to know.
Really?
I have to know.
I have
to.
Nothing. I don't want to know anything. I really enjoy being on the edge of my seat for this one particular show. So yeah. I do that with a lot of the other shows. When I used to watch things like Supergirl and The Flash, same thing. I would stop. I was just like, someone's got a cameo. Like, I don't want to be spoiled when the Green Arrow shows up in The Flash. Like, I wanted that one. That'd be fun. You know, so I don't watch those. But anyway, that wraps up this episode for Game of Thrones stuff. We do have some internet picks, which we'll get to because I did tease those earlier. But in this section of the show is where I thank the people on Patreon that help us make it. If you go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, you can sign up to become a patron. It's completely up to you. You can donate per show. So it's, you know, 5 cents, 25 cents, whatever. It's 25 cents works out to be $1 a month. So easy math. But it's only on a per show basis. So earlier this year, I went on vacation and there wasn't any episodes being recorded because I was in the desert. So there was obviously no money going through for those. So it's kind of that peace of mind that we only do on a per episode basis. But one of the cool things that you get to be part of if you join the Patreon is the Citadel Cafe Slack chat. It's for patrons only. It's a great place where members of the community kind of hang out, talk about nerdy stuff. Phil Rood shared something really cool earlier, one of the podcasts that he did, where he's talking about a favorite artist. Alistair shares links all the time. He's a lot of updates from Star Trek Discovery and stuff that he shares in there. So it's just this really cool community where people are, you know, that have been either on the show or are patrons of the show kind of go and hang out. So it's patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. And if you have you have the inkling to support the show, then I very much appreciate it. It goes a long way to helping this stay a podcast. So my internet minute this week happens to be Minecraft related. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Basically, when I started off the Citadel world on the Minecraft realm, I wanted to try and... I didn't want to control everything, but I really kind of wanted to make sure that it was going to be a fun experience. And I've been playing my own single-player world for several months, which actually started off as a realm. It started off as a realm trial with Stephen Sharkey Schrenard, who's been on this show before, and his kids and me. And they kind of showed me how to play Minecraft. And then I kind of got carried away and I built some really cool stuff and I didn't want to give it up. So when he didn't continue the server, he downloaded the seed and sent it to me so that I could install it on my own system and play on that world, but single player. It was perfect. And so I knew that you can control that kind of stuff. So I went on and I did some research. And basically after talking to a bunch of people that wanted to play on the server, there were some requests and they were saying like, look, it's Minecraft, it's going to be fun, it's going to be vast, but could you make sure that there's at least a jungle somewhere? Because I've been playing for months on my single player, and I've roamed in many directions. I've never seen a jungle. It took me 3 months just to find a mine shaft, like an abandoned mine shaft. So it can be, it's completely just algorithm controlled. So when I did the world, I went to mineatlas.com. And what that does is that you put in a seed or you quest a kind of seed, and then it shows you a huge map of the area, but it's really, really zoomed out. And so you can see, oh, desert, jungle, meadow. Like you can kind of see the biomes and see what's available. So if you want like an ice spikes biome or something like that. And you can research different seeds and find out things that people have already found that, oh, this is like super rich in ice if you really like ice, or if you want to do a winter thing, etc. You can control things like how extreme the hills are and all that kind of stuff. So what I did for fun is I typed in my address into mineatlas.com and hit enter.
Okay.
And what that does is it takes your, well, normally it would be a random assortment of letters and numbers, but it takes my non-random assortment of letters and numbers and turns it into algorithmically a seed number. And I tried a bunch of different stuff. So my street address here in Dartmouth is what we're playing on as a seed.
Because that is so cool.
Right? I thought it was kind of fun.
That's really neat.
And because it, as it turns out, it has a jungle, mesa, desert, forests, meadows. It has a couple of ice spikes biomes. They're a little far, but hey, we've got them. All of this kind of stuff was available. There's a couple of guardian temples, like all these kind of things. I didn't really make big notes as to where everything was. I just kind of like took a glance and said, okay, if this resolution equals, you know, 16 blocks. So it's giving you pixel resolution, but pixel resolution on this map represents chunks. So each pixel is like 16 blocks. So you can get far pretty quickly. And the nice thing about it is that if we really get jammed or if we're really in a hard spot and people are just like, God, I really want to find out where that ice biome is and no one can find it, we can kind of communally say like, well, Joel can look at the map and we can find out roughly where it is. Stuff like that. So I just really, really, really like it. And it was a fun kind of little note. So once I got in there, I was like, well, I found this meadow. I was like, wow, this looks actually kind of really central. It's really close to where we spawn in. And it's probably a decent place for a number of people to set up. Because, like, you can always find a spot to put your first house. But, like, trying to find a spot where, like, several people can put their first house is kind of difficult.
Right.
So I found this meadow that's in between all these hills. I called it Dartmouth Meadows for fun. And I think the inspiration was, I can't remember the name of the city, but it's something Valley, Hill Valley from Back to the Future.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of took that note of Hill Valley and kind of went in there and kind of named this thing Dartmouth Meadows, because of course it's not a western, it's more like trees and grass and stuff, but mm-hmm. It turned out that there's actually a really cool spot, and there's several places for people to build houses and there's lots of room, and we're not too far from things like varying, you know, different kind of wood. So like there's very easily within 1,000 blocks you can get all the different kind of wood with the exception of acacia, so stuff like that. Which I just thought was really cool. And I know that there's a savanna biome in the world. I just haven't found it yet. But yeah, so that's kind of where things are with mineatlas.com. So if you want to go there and play around with your own Minecraft seed, fun stuff. Type in your address, see what it pumps out. You can type in your phone number. You can type in your favorite numbers. You can type in all kinds of stuff just to kind of see what the seed kind of generates. And then move around and see, you know, kind of what the world might look like if you decide to play it in Minecraft. So anyway, I thought it was pretty cool.
That's so neat. So that's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So you said you'd mentioned earlier in pre-show that you had a pick as well.
I did. Yeah, I had to ask you if this was sacrilege or not to talk about another podcast on the podcast.
No,
but,
of course not.
my roommate actually introduced me to a podcast called The Adventure Zone. It can be found on the MaximumFun.org website. It's another network. There's a bunch of big, you know, podcasts that are on that. But it's three brothers and their dad playing D&D. And it's hilarious. It's heartbreaking. It's intense. There's such an amazing story behind it. And I'm halfway through the second last episode that's currently out. So they currently have about 66 episodes,
nice.
66 episodes, 67 episodes out. I'm on currently 66, with a couple of bonus episodes here and there.
In total, so, or like, just this season?
It's not really a season. They just have it by chapters. There's like story arcs.
Okay.
And it's on iTunes.
I've heard about this before, but I thought it was a lot older than 66 episodes.
It's they've been doing it for about 2 years.
Okay.
So they've been working on it for a little while. So it's been going for a bit.
So they're not weekly.
It's like bi-weekly.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's bi-weekly. So that makes sense. Weeks. So So they just start off, and it's not like, you know, for, you know, any fans that are, you know, any people listening that are like really, really big D&D fans, who, you know, are, you know, right on the rules and everything. They're kind of playing more of like a hard and fast, loose sort of version.
Okay.
Of D&D. It's not like, you know, they're going into the rule book and everything. They'll do some of it, but they're very loose with everything, and they've really locked in their characters, and they've played through this starting campaign, which I actually was playing at the same time that I first started listening to this.
Oh, cool.
So I had to skip the whole first story arc because we were halfway through this campaign with my D&D group.
Oh.
So I actually couldn't listen. I couldn't listen to that portion because I was afraid it would give away some things.
Right.
So after I'm done this, I will go back and listen to it. I still haven't listened to it. But it gets into, like, after about a couple of weeks when people found, okay, yes, they really, really enjoy this. It's very funny. They, you know, the Griffin McElroy, the guy who runs it, he's the DM essentially. He has written this entire story arc. And he's gotten, we're on the finale. Like I'm probably tonight I will start the first episode of the finale. And they say it's not like the full on finale. It's the finale of this arc, but they say they're going to continue it after the fact. I'm not sure how that's going to work. But they've basically created like an amazing, amazing story. And there are moments that I've sat there, like even at work where I had to be like, oh my God, like in the break room at lunch, and people are just like, what are you okay? What's wrong with you? And I'm like, you know, there's noises that are, I'm just like looking around and seeing if it's like an actual thing that's happening in real life. And the sound design is really great. And they get, you know, a bunch of fans who, you know, accumulated, you know, music for it and things. And,
cool.
They do a fun thing when people use, like they comment about it on Twitter and use a particular hashtag, they take their name and put that name for another character. And you know, there's been some hilarious, you know, mispronunciations of things, and they throw in a lot of pop culture references, even though it's like in a medieval fantasy sort of realm, you know, like D&D, high fantasy. They still manage to throw in like, you know, a race car episode of some kind, and they have a lot of talk about elevators. And this was thrown in as like a out of spite because someone said, "Oh, Griffin, you can't have elevators in D&D," and he's like, "Watch me." Is a full episode about elevators just because someone said he couldn't do it.
Nice.
But it's so good. I didn't think I'd ever get so wrapped up into like a story like this. But it's so silly, and but it's not even just silly. They have silly moments, but it's like it's great. I can't even say enough about it. It's excellent. I've been trying to tell. I mean, I mentioned it to you before, and I've been trying to get as many people as I can to listen to it. So it's it's a bit more, yeah. And if like, don't stress about the rules. If you're a fan of D&D and you know the rules inside and out, they're not playing by legit, I mean, they are playing by legit D&D rules, but it's, they're letting some things go. It's very loose.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, it's fun to listen to if you're a D&D player, because you can, you know, you figure out some stuff going on, and oh, it's good. It's real good.
Cool.
Highly recommend.
Right on. So that's
MaximumFun.org.
Right. And that's called The Adventure Zone.
The Adventure Zone. Yep.
Nice. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com. Still recording live to hard drive. We're not streaming at the moment. Still working on that, but stay tuned. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com and let us know what you thought about the latest episode of Game of Thrones. Or send in thoughts on next week's episode, because you'll be able to write the show long before we record if you watch it early. Love to have some listener feedback there too. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com. You can follow me, my name, on Twitch TV, on Twitter, on Instagram. Those are kind of my three zones right now. And please check out Forge Publishing and check out Piper Thibodeau's book, The Art of Daily Paintings, The Art of Piper Thibodeau. I made the damn book. You think I could remember the title? it's out now. It's being shipped from Kickstarter. After Kickstarter fulfillment is complete, we move promptly into pre-order fulfillment. All those orders are in. The books are ready to go. Dave's just going to keep on trucking because Dave is amazing. And then after that, the book will be open for sale. So it'll be up on forgepublishing.com in the bookshop on the site, which you can't get to now, but it'll be announced on social media and stuff like that. So follow me, follow Forge, and you will find out when that book is available. Or hey, like I mentioned earlier, you can come visit me in person at Decaf or at Halcon in the next couple months, and I will have some copies there as well. Megan, where can people find you online?
As always, Instagram. Instagram is my main squeeze. And that's at Nerdasmic. It's NERDASMIC. I also have a very, very messy Tumblr that is not really structured in any form of way. So if you follow me on Tumblr, please don't judge me. It's a mess. I haven't cleaned my room yet, sort of. And eventually I will be getting into my... once I get my computer and my technology that I need for school, I can start using that towards my YouTube channel as well. So I'll be doing some more crafting tutorials for cosplay, some cosplay makeup tutorials, and just general vlogging.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.